I'm joined in the studio by the lovely Eve Farrelly, and Eve works with the amazing charity Carry. Carry would look after children that have been affected by sexual abuse, which is an amazing charity, and they say 1 in 5 children cross their door, which is quite empowering, the work that they do. Eve!
Good morning, Shane. How
good
are you?
Morning. It's lovely to have you in studio.
It's lovely to be here.
Before we start, I'm sure we'll say a big hello to all your lovely colleagues that are down in Drumcondra listening.
And Limerick.
Galway, yeah. And anyone else that's joined in, thank you very much. Eve, you're very welcome.
Thank you so much.
It's great to have you in studio.
I might just apologise first. I have a bit of a cough, just in case that comes up.
That's okay. You're only human.
Thanks so much.
That's absolutely fine. So, Eve, you've got a great story. Tell us it.
Well, I suppose my journey towards Carry was late, and maybe not so late. I worked when I left school. I went straight into work, because that's what you did in my house. You brought your wage home. And I went straight into retail, and I stayed there for about 10 years. And when I had my second child, I went on I stayed home. I went on a career break. I stayed home with the two kids. And it was really then that I made the decision, you know, about where I wanted to go moving forward. And, you know, retail wasn't it for me. That wasn't where my passion lay. It is where it lays for some people, but it wasn't for me. And I always wanted to do psychology. And the reason, embarrassingly enough, why I always wanted to do psychology, I don't know if any of you remember, but back in the day, there used to be this program called Cracker.
Okay.
Anybody heard of it?
Never heard of it.
Did you know Cracker, Lucy?
I absolutely loved it. Robbie Coltrane.
I wanted to be Robbie Coltrane. So Cracker was this program that I watched at a very impressionable age, where of this man who would go into a crime scene and he'd be able to tell you the psychological thinking of the criminal at the time. You know,
okay.
And when I was a child watching this, this was fascinating for me. So I thought, I'm going to go and I'm going to do an undergrad in psychology. You know, I'm going to, you know, it's 4 years, and some people say, oh, I'm not going to go to college, but, you know, it's a 4-year degree. You know, my response to that is 4 years is happening anyway. So where do you want to be at the end of the 4 years, with the degree you want, or still talking about how it's going to take 4 years to get a degree? So I went to DBS and I got my undergrad in psychology. And when I was there, a lecturer turned around to us and said, you know, you want to think about when you leave, you're going to be leaving with 300 people who have the same degree as you. And what's going to set you aside from everybody else in the workplace? There was no placements in this degree. So we needed to think about how we'd want to build our skill set, if you will. So I thought about this, and I did some amazing volunteer work with the likes of Alternative to Violence Project, the AVP. Where we worked in prisons with violent offenders about violent offending and what would it be like to choose a different way of reacting to something. And I did that for a few years, and I was I learned a lot there. I was in Mountjoy, I was in Arbor Hill, I was in Weefield, and every workshop was of huge learning for me as a human, really, more than anything else. And I also did a bit of volunteer work with OCD Ireland to, you know, provide support groups for people who live with OCD and trichotillomania and body dysmorphic disorder and stuff like that in St. Pat's.
Trichotillomania, what is that?
Trichotillomania is the pulling out and eating of your hair. That's what that is.
Oh my God, I never heard of that before.
Yeah, trick for short. And so at the time, I kind of, I was interested in clinical psychology at the time. And I thought the best way to get to where you want to be is to find out who's already there and go and ask them. So I took a listing of all the clinical psychologists in Dublin, and I sent them out a letter, and I said, this is my name and this is my CV and this is what I have done and this is where I want to be and how did you get there? And they're going to know all the bends to avoid and the potholes and all that kind of stuff. And so one particular, there was a lot of people who were very generous with what they came back with. And there was one person who's the clinical director of Carrie at the time said, why don't you come on in and sit down and have a little chat and we'll see. And so I came in and I sat down and they said, why don't you volunteer on the helpline for a few hours a week? So I said, oh, I can do that. I can volunteer on the helpline. And I've been there ever since, you know.
Okay.
And so that's how I got.
So you've got a lots of experience in areas that I'm sure people are terrified of.
Yeah, yeah. And that's interesting, really, is it? Why did I do that? I don't actually know.
It's very interesting.
But I was drawn to that. And it was terrifying, you know. It was terrifying.
Just like coming in here now and look
just
how
like coming in here
and
now.
Look how perfect you're coming across. You're a pro at this. Okay, so tell us about Carrie.
So Carrie is... Carrie is a therapy and support service centre for children who've been impacted by sexual abuse. And we have a number of services that we provide. So our core one is a therapeutic service where we provide therapy for children up to the age of 18 who've been impacted by sexual abuse and up to the age of 12 who present with sexually harmful behaviours. And that's happening a lot in society today. We're hearing about it a lot. It's been happening a long while. We have a helpline that runs office hours Monday to Friday. Our main caller to our helpline is a mother, and the main reason why she will call is either sexual assault, rape or sexualised behaviours.
That she has witnessed.
That she's witnessed or her child has just disclosed or she's just, you know. And a lot of times what can happen for parents is the experience of their child will trigger that which happened with them as a child. And they maybe don't even recognise it until this has happened and it triggers all that. So sexual abuse is never something that goes from A to B. It's a tree of roots that spread out wide and everywhere and leaves nothing untouched. And so we really, you can only approach sexual abuse from a holistic point of view because it does touch everything. And so you have to look at everything when you're dealing with it.
Okay.
And then we have a forensic accompaniment service that runs out of the Barna House in Galway and in Dublin. So children who have to get a forensic exam after an assault or a disclosure of abuse will get support from us. And we'll get an aftercare service for us, for parents. A lot of the times what happens with parents after they go for a forensic exam is that they leave and then they've nobody to talk to. And of course, even if it's a historic case, they've only heard about it. So it's still fresh trauma. And this is a very isolating topic. People tend to not feel comfortable talking about to their friends or family about it. Even if they did, the friends and family really wouldn't know what to do next from a practical point of view. And so we provide that space for them. And then we provide support for children.
Does a lot of shame go with this?
A lot of shame.
Guilt.
And it's misplaced shame.
Okay.
It's shame that belongs to the person who's done the act, but they've put it onto the person that they're doing it with.
Okay.
And a lot of the healing is around recognising that for children. You know, I mean, the services that we provide are different, but the aim is the same, you know. And the aim is to help children tell their story. And a child who can tell their story in a safe way is very much the cornerstone of healing for the whole family. And children communicate in very different ways and they communicate in the ways that they know how, whether that's through their body in a forensic exam, whether it's through language in a court process or whether it's through play in a therapy room. A child's ability to communicate their experience so that they can look at the likes of shame, embarrassment, and where that's supposed to be appropriately placed is what will help children not allow this experience become the fingerprint of their adulthood. And that's
so I suppose this sounds exactly like stuff that you'd only see on TV or you'd only hear of. But when it's so close to me now, I'm thinking, God, this is real life.
Yes, yeah.
What do you guys see a lot of? The same repetition or is it different every day?
I think it's the same and it's different. You know, we provide help for children in certain processes that remain the same. And so we'll see the certain same things happen over and over again, say in a criminal trial. We'll see, you know, guilty pleas. We'll see verdicts. We'll see juries. We'll see repetitive stuff. But the families are never the same. The trauma is never the same. The impact is never the same. And the connection that you have with that person is never the same, because they're humans and you need to be a human with them. And that link is always individual and it's always...
Okay. On the other side of things, I could only imagine, like, if the end result is really positive, they've gotten to the end of the issue. Like, I'm sure you have cases like that also.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. You know, I suppose it's how we define winning and how we define losing and how we define what is better and what is healing for every individual person. And it's different for everybody. You know, for some families, you know, I mean, children worry about lots of different things. If we take criminal trials, for example, they worry about lots of different things. You know, they'll worry about, am I going to see him? Is he going to see me? You know, what if I get upset on the stand? What if I get angry? What if I forget? What if my mom gets upset? You know, I don't want him to go to jail. If he does, it's going to be my fault. I want him to go to jail. If okay. he doesn't, it's going to be my
you
fault.
You said there a lot, he.
Yes.
So does it happen more so for the males or is it a mixture? Does it happen, like, you know, with females, males, same sex?
From an offender's point of view, it's yeah. predominantly males, but we're seeing more females. And okay. we have more female, we have more families that are dealing with females who are sexually abusing and females who are neglecting and abusing their children.
Because initially, I'll be honest, initially I would have, well, you know, not always thought, but like what enters your head first is like the male.
Yes.
Who is the baddie.
Yes, yes.
And you would automatically think... little female that would obviously be yeah. it, but that's just like, you know, me.
Yeah,
but.
And I think one of the challenges that we have is those kind of visuals and those labels, because the first thing that anybody has to do in order to be able to work with this is to acknowledge the potential for it to exist. We have to acknowledge the potential for females to sexually abuse. We have to acknowledge the reality that teenagers sexually abuse. We have to acknowledge the possibility of that happening. And once we do that, we'll be able to see when it does, because it does happen.
Okay. To anybody listening, I've got lots of friends and they've got lots of children. I've got, you know, siblings, and they absolutely idolise their children.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think parents love to protect, guard,
yes.
support and make sure that their children are always safe.
Yeah.
But sometimes that isn't the case. So what would you say? How do you keep a kind of a safe boundary? Do you have any tips?
Between parents and children,
mm-hmm.
I would say that there are certain components that are essential for sexual abuse to take place within a family. And I'd say if we worked with them, that's a really good way of protecting children. And the first thing would be communication.
Okay.
So people who abuse children will have to undergo a certain level of isolating of that child. And so if you're really connected with a strong communication link that you work on actively all the time between yourself and your child, you become a safe person for that child. And that child can feel easier to communicate things with you. So that's a really strong, strong defense mechanism that you and your child can use every day, is your ability to communicate and to hear and listen to them in the way that they communicate with you. So that's really, really important. And I would say to any parent who is wanting to be preventative about this stuff, that would be a big one.
I often hear people saying, I was in Dunn's last week and I heard a woman saying, get up, or, you know, she's giving out hell to her child, you know, wait till your father gets you.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden the child is like over to the trolley instantly. And I thought, yeah. God, number one, isn't it great that child has a father?
Mm-hmm.
But then secondly, I'm thinking, like, the fear of the most, like, important person of your life.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, is that right? Is that wrong?
You know, I think Winnicott used to say, the best mother is the mother that's good enough. Okay. And that's really important to understand from a parental perspective, and especially from a mother's perspective, because mothers wear the weight of being good very heavily because they love their children so, so much.
It's an unconditional love, isn't it?
It's an unconditional love, but it brings with it huge pressure and huge, huge internal self hatred speech if you get it wrong, you know. And here's the thing, being a perfect mother is not going to do your child any good, or you, you know, because you're working off a level that's not really authentic or sustainable. And being a really neglectful mother is not going to help your child either. So,
it's finding that balance.
It's finding that balance and being good enough and being kind and compassionate with yourself if you turn around in Dunn's and you're at the end of your tether because, you know, it's been the midterm break and you've had them all week and you can't see straight and you have to get the shop and they turn around and they say that. We have to take everything into context here
okay.
as well.
So number one, communication. Mm. So you've got to build that and make sure your child knows that it is a 100% safe ground.
It's 100% safe
ground. So what else is important?
And, you know, and I'd also say this, you know, your safe person has special magic powers. And those special magic powers are that you can say anything to that safe person and maybe whatever you were threatened with won't happen. You know that kind of
totally.
Way?
Totally.
So keeping a secret doesn't apply to your safe person. And there are really two type of secrets that we can talk to children about. The secrets that, you know, I robbed a bit of chocolate out of the fridge, don't tell mom, right? You know, that kind of secret. And then there's the secrets that make us feel bad about ourselves. And it's the secrets that make us feel a little bit bad about ourselves that are okay to talk about to our safe person.
Okay, that's really important.
Yeah, I would probably just define it.
So what else would you say? Communication?
Communication is a big thing, you know, and if we move children a little bit more into age when it gets to teenagers, I would be remiss not to talk about phones for a minute and technology. And, you know, there's some people in our profession that would say smart parents don't give their children smartphones. And there's good reason for them to make that comment.
Let's face it, you know, like they're getting younger with mobile phones. I was speaking to a friend of mine during the week, his little girl, probably not even 10, speaking to her for probably 15 minutes. And the phone was stuck to her hand and her face. Mm. And she wasn't watching anything consistently. Mm. I think she was on Snapchat. I wasn't really minding. But the finger was flying and it was flicking and she was taking pictures and all that. Mm. Okay, it does have its benefits. But also, let's face it, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 even.
Yeah. I mean, we're residing in a generation gap now that maybe we won't see in the next generation gap. And that is that the parents of today are digital tourists and their children are digital natives. And there is a gap between what children know and understand and what parents can grasp. And these are the parents who are the custodian of safety for the children. And there is that gap that resides there. You know, they're building cots now with iPads built into them.
The phones are dangerous, okay? And that's...
They're two clicks away, I think, at any time.
Have you seen any cases come through that, like, may have would have started through mobile phone, through texting or through images?
Yes, we do. We do see those cases. I don't think it's ever been established in those cases that we have made the decision or other agencies that have linked in with made the decision that this was the nucleus. But they're absolutely a contributing factor.
Sometimes the basics are so important that we ignore them. If you're a parent, check your child's phone.
Check your child's
regularly,
phone. Yeah.
Hourly.
Yeah.
Not weekly.
Check the apps that are being downloaded.
Okay.
And who can get access to those apps. You know, that kind of stuff. And also, I think teenagers need to maybe understand that, you know, the taking pictures and sending them on to your mates is actually a criminal offence.
I did a course many years ago, and one of the first lessons, I think, was through it, like social media. And one of the first questions was, would you show that photograph to your granny?
Yeah.
In front of all your family. And if you wouldn't,
yeah.
Don't do it.
Don't do
and
it.
And there was a very good YouTube video about a girl in the UK. Now, it was an advertising campaign, but she took a picture, sent it to someone else. There was two of them sitting there. The other guy took a screenshot of it over that. Now, they were only young lads or whatever. And it went completely viral around her school. And the whole school was like,
Yeah.
You know, traumatizing her over the situation.
Yeah. And that's common enough. That is common enough where you might have somebody who's being assaulted and somebody else is videoing it and it's sent around to the friends. Or you could have what girls or boys think they're in a relationship and they're exchanging this, and then the mates find it or the mates screenshot it and they send it around.
And it's
distributing
gone. You can never catch it back. You can never re-catch the stone that you throw into the ocean.
No, it's gone.
So Eve, tell me, just before we finish up there, you've got lots of information and thank you. Any signs to look out for if you're a parent that you can think of?
I think, you know, each parent will know their child inside out. And so if there's something off to maybe whatever that might be, because every child is different, to maybe to just engage in that a little bit more. I would be checking phones. I would be checking iPads. Look at who the people are that are in this person's life. You know, drawing pictures is fantastic, especially for younger children. I would also say if somebody feels that they have maybe a little concern or would like to know more about that, that they could ring us.
Okay.
They can absolutely ring us on our helpline and we
okay.
can go through that.
So you're at carry.ie online.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And just before we finish up, you've got a special event coming up that you want to give us some information on?
We have a lunch that happens every Christmas. It's happening on the 29th of November. It's where everybody gets into their glad rags and you know, comes along and tries to do a little bit of fundraising for Carry and the services that we provide. You know, we're only part funded. And so we really rely on the generosity of people in order to get these services out. And so if anybody's interested in buying a ticket and coming along, it's a really fabulous day. Alan Hughes will be presenting it and we have Mary Maher in there and various different celebrities. And if they want to link in with Patricia at carry.ie.
I was there last year and I have to say it was a fantastic year. And it also
great
fun. It's the start of the Christmas season and I'll be there this year.
Woo!
So look, Eve, thank you so much. You're from Carry, and if anybody has been affected by today's show, they can get in touch with carry.ie. The most important thing is branch out, get support and ask for the help.